Hello, and welcome to episode 17 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Breakroom. I'm your host, Brad Schreffler. This week, I talk with Sarah Ann Lalonde, a teaching candidate out of Canada and fellow podcaster. I met Sarah in her role as community manager for Voice Ed Radio, and in the last few months, I have come to realize how passionate and driven she is for education. As I say in the interview, she is the most qualified and prepared pre-service teacher I have ever met. I also felt that her position of not yet being a full-time teacher gave her a unique perspective on the field, so I knew she would be a great guest. Sarah and I talk about a lot of things, from her podcast to our time at Voice Ed, and we also talk about the divide between educators looking to push change forward and those wanting to remain unchanged, and a lot about the power of social media and the connections we make with our teachers. So, sit back and enjoy episode 17 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Sarah Ann Lalonde. Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I am joined today by a wonderful guest, someone who I have talked to multiple times online and have met through some of our mutual projects we're working on, and just the embodiment of a passionate educator, I think, is what comes to mind when I think of my guest today, and that is Sarah Ann Lalonde. Did I say that right at all, by the way? I have no idea if I said your last name. I just kind of mumbled it, I think.
Lalonde, yeah. Lalonde. Okay. Steven says Lalonde. I work with it.
All right, cool. Well, hi, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really cool being a guest on a podcast, especially when you have your own podcast. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, it is different. I've been a guest on a couple different shows now, and it is a very different experience. Like, I feel like when I'm doing my show, I think a lot about making sure I'm not doing the majority of the talking. And so I watch, like, the waveforms, and, like, in my head, I'm doing percentages of, like, okay, I'm talking too much, or I'm not talking enough. I'm like, And now when I'm a guest on someone's show, it's like the opposite. I want to make sure that I'm doing, because I know the show is supposed to be about me by being a guest. So it's like more work to be a guest, I think,
than it is to be a host. I didn't want to say it, but it is 100%. Yeah.
All right. Well, Sarah, if you could, tell my audience a little bit about you and what it is you are up to.
Absolutely. So I just started my second year of Teachers College here in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. I am the community manager for Voice Ed Radio. So I do a lot of the social media work with them. And I also host my own podcast. So I host a bilingual podcast called Que Sera Sera, which kind of focuses on my journey into education. And with that, I write some blogs here and there for Voice Ed as well. But yeah, I'm just really involved in the Voice Ed and the Voice Ed Radio community.
Yeah, you are very involved. And that's how you and I met is, you know, Steven brought me into Voice Ed. And that's how we got connected, a couple episodes of, like, On Ed Mentors and some other stuff during the 15-hour live stream. And so it's been a lot of fun connecting with you. And when I said, like I said, passion, when I think of passion, your show is just so cool to me. Mm-hmm. I messaged you on Twitter because your episode about back to school, where it was just kind of you describing the experience of going back to school, I just thought, I'm going to send that out to my teachers like 3 or 4 weeks from now when they're struggling and going like, oh, I don't want to be here. And just I'm going to send that to them and say, hey, remember, this is why we're here. Yeah. Like, it was just so cool.
I felt really, passionate and kind of empowered. I love back to school season. It's like better than Christmas, honestly. I get so excited. And I was kind of reflecting on how this might be my last back to school as a student, a university student, but maybe, you know, looking forward, it'll be soon my first back to school as a teacher, hopefully next year. That's very wishful thinking. But nonetheless, I was kind of thinking about how students feel and how I felt as a student going back to school and what that means for, you know, when I was in high school. Like, how was I really this excited when I was going back to school as a high school student? And, you know, I think some years more than others. But honestly, like I say in that little podcast, like, you just have this pit in your stomach on the first day back to school, and the air really does feel different. And I did get to live the first day back to school, because I did a placement, at a school, and I was just excited as I was when I was a little kid. So I think it's just really followed through all the school years, and I hope to be as excited when I become a teacher as well.
Yeah, I think that's great. I just thought it was such a cool perspective. And so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
You know, something I definitely want to start with, most of the times we connect, and I've talked about this before, but most of the times we connect, it's through VoiceEd, which is a Canadian radio network. And so often I have no idea what's going on when we're talking about things. There's like songs I don't understand and references I don't get, and everybody says a boot, and I don't know what to do with that. One thing I want to ask is the process to become a teacher sounds vastly different in Canada than what I'm used to here in the US. And it also varies across parts of the US, but certainly different than what I'm used to in Florida. So you talk about being a teacher candidate, I think is one of the words I've heard you guys say,
yeah.
One of the phrases I've heard you say, and you're a teaching student. So what does schooling look like post high school? What do you have to do to become a classroom teacher?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am called a student teacher. I'm called a teacher candidate. I'm called a pre-service teacher. Those are kind of the descriptors that focus on where I am right now in my journey into education. But it all starts, if you're looking to go into teaching, you have to get a degree in anything, basically. You can get a degree in music, you can get a degree in math, you can get a degree in, psychology. You have to have either a 3-year or a 4-year BA or BSc or anything, basically. So I did my BA in languages. I studied in French at the University of Sudbury, University in Sudbury. It's called Laurentian. And so I studied there for 4 years, and then you have to apply to get into Teachers College. So what I had to do, actually, and this is different for those who are studying in French than in English, you actually have to pass a French competence in French. I can't even say it in English. There we go. That's where I am today. I've been speaking French all day and the English words can't come out. So you have to pass that test with an 80 average or higher. So it's really demanding and it's really competitive to get into a French teachers college here in Ontario. There's only 2 of them. There's tons of English ones, but, here in Canada and in Ontario, there's a very large gap of French teachers, so that's why I studied in French and wanted to continue my education in French after high school, just because I knew that my chances of, you know, potentially getting a job was going to be a lot higher. Being bilingual as a teacher, being bilingual is huge here in Canada. But education-wise, yeah, so you get your degree, and then we are now in a process of, it's implemented now. It's a 2-year program of Teachers College. So 3 years ago, they changed it. So now we're kind of the second guinea pigs. There's already been, it was the first cohort to graduate last year. So now we're kind of the second cohort going in, doing all of these new classes that they've kind of constructed for us, which some are, you know, really helpful. And we get more placement time, and I think overall it's a really good 2-year program that we're going through.
So essentially what you have is you don't get your bachelor's in education, or in other words. You have to get more or less a master's in education after getting a bachelor's in another field?
So you get a bachelor's in a field, and then you get your bachelor's of education in 2 years. You get your
BEd. So it's still a bachelor's. It's just like it's a second major, more or less?
It's a second degree, yeah. So I will... Okay. Have 2 degrees, and then I plan on doing my master's, so then I can go and apply to do my MEd, whether it be with like a supervisor and do my thesis, or I can just do course-based master's in education.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So it is a little different. So like in Florida, for example, which is where I'm at, you can get a bachelor's in anything. And then as long as you can pass the subject area exam, which is on grade level that you would teach, you can start teaching. Like, you don't have to do a 2-year program or anything else. Like, I had a degree in business administration, and I, you know, was not having trouble finding jobs. I wasn't finding anything I liked doing. And I went into substitute teaching because I, you know, wanted something to keep me busy, and remembered why I had actually started college as a music ed major. And I was like, wow, I should have stuck with this. So I just went and took a test for like $75, and then all of a sudden I could be a teacher. And
Are you kidding
that
me?
was No, I'm not. That's pretty much it. And then you have the first 3 years while you're teaching to finish up the courses, like some of the courses you would do, some of the extra coursework. But even that is like, we have an in-county program that you do it just on a handful of nights and you're pretty much done after four courses. I don't know. You could. We know how much you love Florida. So.
I know.
You could come down right now. You'd be a teacher tomorrow. I promise.
That is unreal. That's really interesting. So, okay. Can I ask you a question then? Can we do this?
Let's
okay.
Do it. Go for it.
No, I'm just really interested because what do you find that teachers are underqualified to teach? If you're telling me that anyone with a BA or any degree can go and become a teacher, it doesn't necessarily mean that they know all of the pedagogy. They just know their subject area.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say across the board they're underqualified. A lot of times people that go that route are in like extracurriculars and non-traditional classrooms quite often. So they don't necessarily follow the same pedagogy. They were taught their way before and some of those older strategies still work. So, you know, not a band director so much, but like we have a lot of construction programs and hands-on like sort of technical training programs.
Yeah.
And a lot of those are what we call alt ed. So they weren't music or ed majors. And they are trained the way they need to be trained. So it's the pedagogy isn't quite the same because it's all hands-on learning anyways.
Right.
But in terms of regular classroom teachers, we have tons of phenomenal teachers that came in through the alt-ed program. You know, and so no, I wouldn't say generally they're undertrained. I feel like the advantage I have with those kinds of teachers is that they don't come in with this belief that they already know everything. When they come out of an ed program from a college, I feel like they come in going, well, I just got out of school and you were there forever ago, so you don't know the newest strategies I do. And blah. And they get this kind of chip on their shoulder sometimes. So they become harder to teach. I feel like alt ed people are more than willing to try whatever you throw at them because they feel like they're drowning every second of the day.
Right.
So any lifeline you can give them, they're thrilled for.
It's kind of cool. Yeah. Because the people who are coming in from the alt ed, they're kind of experts in their field then, you could say?
Sometimes. I had a degree in business and became an English teacher, so I don't know that I was necessarily an expert in my field. I just like books. So,
that'll do it.
But yeah, but I don't know. I feel like I said, I feel like coming in that way for myself, I was moldable clay. You know, I was going to try anything you could throw at me because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. So I think that worked out well for me. It also depends on the school you end up in because it kind of depends on the support program and support structures in place already in terms of mentorship. Because my first year I was kind of thrown in and good luck and it was rough. You know, I didn't have a lot of support that first year. So I was just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what stuck.
Yeah.
So, but you know, it has its ups and downs.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Really cool.
Cool. Well, I did want to say thank you for all your work with VoiceHead because I really am I'm a strong believer in that network and what it does. I love the work that you guys are doing. You and Stephen both are doing with that network.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know that I've talked too much about it on my show. So would you maybe want to talk a little bit about kind of what VoiceHead is? And
let's do it. Yeah, absolutely. It's my favorite thing to talk about. no, you're really right. So Stephen and I work very hard and we are open to anybody who is willing to, wanting to come and work with us. Because what VoiceEd is it's an open community. So what we do is we offer a multimedia platform, whether it be on VoiceEd.ca or on VoiceEd Radio, where you can go and share your voice. So our motto is your voice is right here. So what we want is we want educators to come and listen to the radio. We want educators to share their stories via podcasts or blogs and just create content to share with not only educators in Canada, but around the world, evidently. So it's a space to collaborate and obviously to connect. You know, we wouldn't be here. We would not be talking if it wasn't for VoiceEd, honestly.
True.
So,
absolutely.
You know, and it's just become this really amazing community of passionate educators. I would say that everybody on, in the voice ed community is what we call, I would say, the keeners. And I think that is a Canadian term because we were mentioning it on Ed Mentors last Thursday, and Carol Selva had no idea what a keener was. So
yeah, I got nothing on that one.
You don't know. Oh, so a keener is kind of like somebody who is really, a keener teacher would be somebody who's like really involved and always going the extra step and not like brown noser, but just really devoting all of their time and really just giving all of themselves, going the extra mile than a normal teacher would.
Okay.
That's okay. My, really
chop. And I think that's fair. I mean, obviously, like, you know, between my, you know, just from my experience, I spend another, on top of my day job, 10 or so hours a week working on, you know, Planning Period podcast between, you know, voice ed and whatever else. And all the people on voice ed are putting in that excess hours about education, you know, because we want to move this forward. And that's, I think, a great, I think that's what I love about voice ed is it's just it's a network of people that want to make positive change happen in education. And that's and all I'm about.
Nobody's getting paid. It's not, you know, it's just we come and we hang out on ed, or we do a radiothon for fun just because, you know, we think and we hold very strongly this professional development that happened. That's constantly happening. You know, the radio plays 24/7 EDU content, and you know, you can get it on your phone, you can get it on your laptop. It's always streaming, right? So yeah, I think it's just a really special space that has, you know, all thanks to Catalyst Stephen Hurley, who, you know, it starts with a really small idea, and when you get like-minded educators together, it just became this really, really amazing community.
Yeah, it really has. And I also like to, I love the experimental nature of the whole thing. It is one of the, I was looking at the bumpers you had kind of written up, and one of them you had written was that it's kind of like your makerspace.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such a cool way to look at what voice ed is, because that's a lot of what I've done with you guys is I've said, hey, can I try this for an hour? Or could I give me a slot on this time and I'll just throw this out there and try something? And every time Steven's like, yeah, absolutely. Here you
go. That's
our
favorite thing. We just want to go and try. It's not, you know what I love and what makes me just really comfortable is that it's not formal. It's a very informal discussions, you know, things on our online mentors live show just don't go right. There's people cutting out. There's people coming back in, you know, here and there. So it's not like, okay, the pressure's on. You have to be the know all. You're coming on and everybody's listening. It's just a really, it's a place where you can take risks, right? And you can be wrong,
absolutely.
And you can share your opinion, and people will listen to you openly. And if they think differently, they will, you know, kindly tell you otherwise. And it's just it offers a place for discussion, to learn, and to grow. Yeah.
Yeah, and if people could see the side chat that goes on during On Ed Mentors, it'd be a whole different proof of the lack of professionalism sometimes.
But that's what makes it special. It helps us. You know, we're not just being these professional educators. We're people too, right? So if I want to have a sidebar discussion with you about if Walt Disney is better or Universal, I'm going to feel free to do that.
Yeah, we kind of totally derailed the chat that entire episode.
I'm okay with that. I love it. It's authentic. It's 100% authentic.
I like it. I dig it. All right. Well, so we kind of got some of that stuff out of the way. I want to go to sort of my main questions, and I'm fascinated. I think you're only my second international guest to be on my show. So I'm interested in your answers to some of my questions tonight.
Okay.
So we're going to start with my main question. So what is the biggest problem facing education today?
Oh, boy. we're just rolling with it right now.
We go right into it. Yep.
It's not like an interview where I can think, you know, 2 minutes before answering the question.
I mean, you can think. No, I'll clear out silence and stuff like that. I can edit this out.
The one that I guess, right, because I'm still a teacher candidate, so I have a very fresh or naive maybe perspective on these answers, and that'll be my disclaimer. so I think what I'm living right now, the biggest problem in education is kind of these two worlds of people who are looking to push forward and then those who are still kind of set in stone in their ways. I feel like I'm living that mostly because I'm one of these, new educators coming into the field, coming into the classroom, coming into a school with all these really cool new ideas and talking about maker spaces and, you know, getting on a Flipgrid and using, you know, technology, incorporating it in the classroom and seeing the value in that, and not just technology as a, as an outlet, but really as a tool to show learning and all of the benefits there. But then you have other teachers, whether it be, the head of your department who's telling you that you can't do it that way, or, you know, you have colleagues that you would love to collaborate with that just aren't, open to those sorts of things. So I think that that really kind of, I have a really great expression in French, but I don't know how to translate it. It kind of,
you can say it in French. I'm sure it'll sound awesome.
It's like body la roue. It like stops the wheel from turning, right? It just like stops that collaboration. It stops that teamwork, you know, your school community, all of that. It kind of, it puts a damper on it. So, you know, if you're trying to incorporate all of these new ideas and, you're trying to mold the students, and then you have these students going into another, teacher's class and they're kind of shutting all that down, you know, are you really making any progress? So that's what I think that we can really start. And I think that we are making progress, but I think that that's something that needs to change with the time.
Okay. Yeah. As kind of your fresh perspective, what do you think could be done to make that change happen? I mean, you're talking about making change in people that don't want to change. So how can we make that a reality, short of saying wait for all of them to retire?
Right. No, we can't wait that long. I think that what you're doing is exactly what needs to be done. So it's all of that. It's offering the that PD, like in the school. Like, you are only at one school, right?
Yeah, I'm at one school.
Yeah, cool. So you are their outlet, and hopefully they like you and hopefully they want to work with you, because you're the one that will hopefully get them to change their perspective. So if they
depends on the day if they like me or not,
it's fair. But if you've built a good relationship with them and they trust you and they, you know, they believe in what you're doing and your role, then I don't see why they wouldn't be open to change, right? If you can show them the value in your, you know, in your flipped PD sessions, in everything that you've done, like, you know, I've been following some of the stuff that you've done just in the past week, going back to school. Like, I think that's so amazing, and you have to start somewhere, right? So you kind of assess where your teachers are. Nobody, you know, some of them might just start to learn Google if you're a Google school. Start with them there. If somebody else is, you know, they're good with Google Classrooms or good with, you know, the G Suite, well, then we can start building on that and just building and building and building. So
baby steps, getting those people that don't want to move forward in baby steps.
Absolutely. Cause if you just throw everything at them and say, you know, tomorrow I want to see change in your classroom, here are some things that you can incorporate, and you don't show them how to incorporate them, what the, you know, why they should even, you know, change the way that they're doing things, because to them, if it works, if it's not broke, why fix it, right? You know, I've been teaching like this for X number of years and my students succeed and so on and so forth. But maybe what they don't realize is that the times are changing and that the world is changing, and, you know, there comes a time when you need to be open to change.
Okay. You know, you just made me think of something, and I'm wondering, as you're saying this, you talked about using technology as not just a tool, but like using it to actually change products and change perspectives. And I'm wondering, and a lot of times when I present new things, I focus a lot on the why, like the philosophical, we're not just trying to make this a minor change. We're trying to make a paradigm shift in the way we look at education. And I'm wondering if maybe I end up shooting myself in the foot with that perspective and gumming at it that direction, because maybe I'm trying to tell a bunch of people that are not willing to make paradigm shifts, but they might be willing to make a minor change.
Absolutely.
So I'm wondering if maybe I'm coming at it the wrong direction. What do you think?
Well, it's all about who you have in front of you, right? Like, I don't know what your teachers are like. So first I would assess that, because if you have a whole bunch of teachers who have been there for a really long time and you know that they're going to be like a tough cookie to crack, well, you know, then I would go about it a different way. But I just read this kind of picture off of Twitter from George Kuros, and it says, "Technology is not a technology is a tool, not a learning outcome." So it's about using blogs or flip charts or producing videos to do these things. So to raise awareness on things or to find answers or to change minds, take actions, make a difference. So I think it's all those other, the words, the actions, what you will produce, not just physically a video, but what this video can do for the students using technology, right?
So looking more at sort of the student outcome in the bigger picture, as opposed to this is just a different way of doing what you're already doing.
Yeah. Cool. I concur.
I can see that.
I concur. I like that. Thanks.
You mentioned one other thing, and you talked about how a student goes from one teacher's classroom that's trying to push for change into another teacher's that isn't. How obvious from a student perspective do you think that dichotomy is?
Oh, I think it would be very evident, honestly. You have a teacher who is constantly, you know, in the school that I'm going to be doing my placement, they have the le chariot, which is like a push cart of laptops. You know, if you have that teacher, say it's me, the English teacher, always bringing in the laptops, getting them, using the students to collaborate on a Google Docs together when they're writing a storyline or something, and then using, asking them to go on Flipgrid and write and record some story responses to a text that we read, you know, that they did in homework. And then, you know, we're using the smart board and we're writing, you know, we're doing spelling or something. And then you go into another classroom where it's worksheets and, you know, Blackboard. And I'm not saying that these do not work. I am the fruit of a student who barely used technology in school because it just wasn't relevant back then, I guess. I don't know. But I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying that, again, with the times, the change is happening. And in those classrooms where it's not happening, I think the students are lacking in the way that they can learn.
Okay. I will safely say that worksheets don't work. I will throw that out there. And without exception, that worksheets don't work.
But
that
worksheets
is not
are
the solution.
They're still happening. I was in a placement where it was worksheet after worksheet after worksheet. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, there's so many other ways we can do this. Let me do it. Like, it's really cool because sometimes, even though I'm a teacher candidate, and even though sometimes I'm undervalued by other teachers because I'm not actually a teacher yet, I feel like I have some insight to offer. Even the, you know, whether it be the student or the teachers in my school that I'm doing my placement, or even my placement teacher, my associate teacher. I'm just putting this little nugget out there. Like, sometimes we're seen like we don't know anything, or we're still learning, which we are, but it doesn't mean that we don't have really cool tools, you know, like, storyboard that, or I don't know, whatever it may be, like just giving us value as teacher candidates.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it kind of comes back. I mean, I'm sure from your perspective, whoever you're placed with, you can tell pretty quickly if they're one of those people pushing forward or holding in.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure that makes a big difference from how much you're able to learn from them as well.
Absolutely. So,
I can see where that's a huge problem. Like, where you could safely say across the board, that's an issue because it affects everyone. It affects the teachers. It affects students. It affects student teachers. It affects the staff. I mean, it affects all of us, right? I mean, that's the constant struggle.
Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes, and I hate to say it, but I really think it's true. And it's that these teachers don't want to change their ways because they don't necessarily want to put in the extra work to change their worksheets into something really more interactive and really more creative and collaborative because they just don't have the time or they don't have the energy, or maybe they do see the value in it, but they just don't want to change.
And you know, it's frustrating, and I agree with you completely, but it's frustrating to me because those same teachers, 9 times out of 10, are spending all their extra hours dealing with discipline issues that they wouldn't have to deal with if they just made the changes. It's like, you're using the hours regardless, and it's so hard to make a teacher, especially one that's stuck in their ways, see that picture of like, okay, you're right. It will take more time for you to develop these innovative, interactive things for the students to do. But you're going to make that time back in all the time you're busy writing referrals and calling parents and documenting behavior issues, because they're not going to be disruptive when they're actively engaged in their learning process.
Yeah. Oh, you just said it. Actively engaged. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I was on the podcast I was on recently. We were talking about positive school or classroom community. So building a positive community. And one of the questions they asked me is like, how do you keep kids from disrupting your class? And I say, well, they can't disrupt me from talking if I'm not standing in the front of the room talking. Problem solved. Like, if I'm moving around the room constantly and they're supposed to be talking to each other, there you go.
Yeah.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Oh my gosh. I never thought of it that way.
So awesome. Well, yeah, I think that's a great answer, you know, for... Mm-hmm. And I love I do like the outside perspective you give, in the sense of you're kind of, I guess, fresh faced is a good way to put it. I don't know, but I'm don't like naive. Naive sounds so negative. I like fresh faced better.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I'm innocent. You know, if you would have asked a teacher who's been teaching for 10 years, they could, you know, just name off a list of so long list of problems, and they're so, jaded, and you know, I don't feel that way. It was kind of hard to think of something that is bad in education, because we're not going into teachers' college and the profs aren't telling us, well, this isn't working in education and this is how we're going to fix it. They just teach us the curriculum and stuff. It's not really insightful like that.
Well, now that you said that, should they be?
Should they be
talking about the problems that actually exist in the reality of education right now? Is that something that we should be with pre-service teachers or whatever it is you guys, you know, we call them student interns or whatever, but are those discussions that you should be having in a university setting, as opposed to waiting until you're in education and get slapped with them in the face?
I think so. I don't think there should be a whole course based on it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I can make it like changes in education or something. Really cool.
I will adjunct that class anytime you need somebody. Just
let's do it. Let's build it. No, I just think it's important to be mindful of the things that aren't working in education and having the conversations about them. It doesn't mean that we're going to fix them, you know, in a year, but we're also, you know, us as teacher candidates in university, we are the up and coming teachers of the future, right? So whatever's not working, we will be the change makers. You know, if it's not working right now, the teachers in the school, maybe they've tried, I don't know. The education system, everything just takes so long to change, right? We've actually been talking about that in our classroom, but it doesn't mean that we don't need to start planning on how things can be changed and how things can be better, because if we're the ones next stepping into the classroom, we can prevent these negative things or all of these problems from happening and just kind of doing the same thing over and over and over.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
And education.
Absolutely. And in the meantime, all of you pre-service teachers can be listening to podcasts like mine where we discuss these big issues. And there you go.
Love it.
All right. Cool. Well, man, that was cool. That was fun.
That was good. Yeah, really good, actually.
I'm gonna move into my second question. And this will be an interesting one for you to answer as still being pre-service, but that's okay. My second question is, what is something you're doing that you wish all teachers would do?
I feel like I have a couple of ideas, but I will go with this one, and it is the power of social media. I feel like I don't know. I don't want to call myself the social media queen, but I wish that every teacher would get connected on Twitter or start writing a blog or do a podcast or start having more conversations with other educators, because I feel like, although I am spending X amount of dollars to pay somebody to teach me in teachers college what education is about, I am receiving more insight and professional development on Twitter, through podcasts, through conversations on Voice Ed Radio, and through following other educators too, like reading their blogs, their posts, their listening to Derek's reflections about how his week went. Like, I love that stuff. And I feel like it's so much more authentic than learning by the book, you know, what is classroom management? Well, here are some tools that you can use and strategies in your classroom. Well, it's not until you listen to a podcast or you read somebody's blog about a student really acting up in the way that they handled it, and you live and you read and you listen to those real life, you know, situations, that you actually start learning. It makes it just so much more authentic. And when you talk to real people on Twitter who are actually in the field of education, it's just so much more, not like useful information, but it just seems so much more real. So I think that if I could give a tip to educators out there, it would just to get connected, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you're not the first person on my show to suggest this as the big thing that people should be doing. As you can imagine, a lot of my guests are already connected educators, which is how I ended up connecting with them. So I, you know, off the top of my head, I know Mandy Taylor talked about this, and Brent Coley mentioned it as well. But I'm wondering, how do we convince people that Twitter isn't just for celebrities and seeing the newest Kardashian thing? How do we get teachers to understand the power of what social media can be?
Well,
as professional development.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's very simple. I would just show them everything that has happened to me and all the opportunities that has been given to me, all thanks to social media. Like, I could just scroll through my Twitter feed and say, oh yeah, I did this podcast with Brad. Yeah, that was because of social media and because of Voice Ed. Okay, yeah. So then I was on Noah's P3. Well, I wouldn't have connected with Noah and knew about her podcast if it wasn't for Twitter. And then I was on the Dr. Will Show, and he's all the way in New Orleans, so I definitely wouldn't have connected and had a really, really insightful conversation about podcasts with him if it wasn't for, you know, the power of social media. And then I could go in all of my like tweets and show them all of the tweets of whether it be tools or sketch notes or whatever I've saved and that I know I can go and refer back to. On my phone, if you look, it's all screenshots of tweets, because I'm like, oh, I have to go and read this blog later, or oh, I really want to go try this application out. It's all like, it's just never ending.
Yeah, I have to say, you might, so radio listeners, you've heard it first. Sarah Ann Lalonde is the proof that social media works for teachers. If you're ever wondering how to convince, just go look up Sarah. She's got it. But seriously,
I feel so strongly about it. Yeah.
But you might be right in that you could be a genuine poster child for this, because I'm thinking about it, and sometimes it amazes, when I tweeted out today that, you know, I was going to be interviewing you, I didn't say like pre-service educator. Like, I feel like you are probably the single most prepared pre-service educator to actually be in a classroom of anybody I can possibly imagine. And I teach teachers every day. It's what I do. We have a massive school, and I work with schools across the district as well. I can't imagine someone being more prepared than you, because you live in the education sphere in a way that most existing teachers and veteran teachers don't already. And you're right. It is all because of that power of social media.
Yes. And I have this really big smirk on my face, because that was so nice of you to say. And I really do appreciate it. And it's, you know, sometimes I wonder, like, how do I keep up with all of this? Because sometimes, you know, my head is just spinning around with so many ideas and Twitter DMs, and just trying to like manage my school life and my professional life and my personal life. But it all boils down to that passion and that curiosity of knowing more, learning more, connecting more. You know, I feel so engaged, and it's kind of like my PLN and my power PLN is like my family, and I always want to know what they're up to. And it's all just magically tied into education. Like, it's all of my passions put into one. And when you find people on Twitter who you connect really well with and who are doing really, really, really cool things, you don't feel as alone. You know, I'm like the black sheep in my faculty, right? Like, I just live, breathe education things, whether it be listening to podcasts or tweeting out stuff. And, you know, I feel like I'm too involved. I'm the keener, right? But then I see people like you and people like Noah and Derek and Steven and Rola, and the list goes on and on. And I feel like, you know, what I'm doing, it's okay. You know, I'm not so much the black sheep.
Yeah, I certainly don't think of you as a black sheep. I'll throw that out there right now. Now, tell me, have you brought any of your fellow classmates into the dark side, as it were? Or have you brought some of them with you?
I've tried, but I haven't tried hard enough. That's where I'll end that one. But, you know, I've had some friends, my teacher candidate friends come on and mentors. They haven't come back. So maybe Derek scared them away when he asked them questions, but we'll just blame it on Derek. One thing though, that was really cool in one of our classes last year actually, is that everybody had to get a Twitter account. It was for a project, and you had to put out 10 tweets with the hashtag of the class, and you had to share something related to French education. And I was like, yes, everyone, like, if you need help, I will help you. Like, here's, you know, I added everybody. And I think I was just like you said, when you do your PD, I was almost too, too keen. I was too excited, and I just wanted to show them like everything at once. And there was a lot of pushback on that, actually. Unfortunately.
Yeah, almost like overloading, kind of like mm-hmm. opening the fire hydrant instead of just giving them a glass of water kind of
thing. Yeah, I got too excited. And I was kind of like tag teaming with the teacher, right? So she's the one that presented the whole project. Now I was like, yes, I will help. And I had already connected with the professor on Twitter, obviously. So we kind of had a game plan there, but.
Oversold it a little bit.
Kind of. But, you know, in the end, everybody had to get Twitter. So. They got Twitter, and I really tried to connect with them, and I showed them people to follow, and I built up that base. So it's, you know, I can't force them to use it. So from there, I can just continue to encourage them and show them what I'm doing, and keep that going. But at a certain point, they have to make the decision to use it or not.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I have had a very similar experience with my staff where I introduced Twitter as a learning tool, and I probably oversold it just as much and ended up with almost no success whatsoever from people willing to share their ideas out there.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know what? And I hadn't seen it from their perspective. Twitter seems like this like huge world where it's like, where do you start? And if you don't know who to follow, or nobody's following you, like, you don't feel very important. And some other people, you know, they get anxious to send out a 140 character tweet. Like, it's a big deal for them, and they are scared that people may judge them. And, you know, is this okay what I'm posting? Like, for me, you just say whatever, like, say your thoughts. Like, for me, Twitter is this really safe, open space. And this is my experience. I'm not saying that it's like this for everyone. Twitter is this open space for me to be vulnerable, ask questions, take risks, share things that somebody may not necessarily agree with. I'm not saying that people agree with everything I say on my podcast, on my blogs, and my tweets, but at least it's a space to share our thoughts and connect with others who may not think the same way as you.
Okay. I can dig that. Now, do you think, you know, you talk about social media, and this is something I've been wondering about recently. There was a recent Ed Chat topic that had to do with are Twitter chats still valuable? And one of the things people said is you end up in this like vacuum of repetition where the same ideas keep getting shared over and over again. And I'm wondering, is it necessary for the teachers to actually produce content? Or is lurking on social media, you know, not participating, but watching and reading regularly and consuming the content on Twitter, is that valuable without the actual content creation component still?
Of course, yeah. If you choose to simply consume, you're still learning, right? If it takes a little while for you to actually start creating, I think it may come to a question to, why wouldn't you want to share and create? Like, if you don't feel confident or comfortable, maybe it just takes some time to go lurk and consume and to see things that people tweet and to see how they word them and, you know, what to put in your 140 characters, you know, what kind of hashtags to use. So I think it might just be, you know, I'm totally cool if you're just going on Twitter to really find out new things and read some cool posts, but I think you almost get more value in creating and posting in the end.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I can dig that. All right. Well, I want to move into my third and final prepared question for you. And my last question is, who is the best teacher you've ever had?
So the best teacher I ever had was my grade 9, 10, and 11 English teacher in high school. Do you need All right. to know why?
Can you tell me a little bit about him? Yeah, absolutely.
So, Madame Gagnon, that was her name. She started, you know, she started with me in grade 9, and she saw that I was a very timid high school student, and I had a lot of ideas. So I was the type of student throughout university or throughout high school that would have a lot of ideas but wouldn't share them. And then because I wouldn't share them mostly because I wasn't confident in what I was saying. But then when I started writing, she kind of seen all of the blah, blah and all of the ideas and all those little, all the things, all the nuggets that were in my mind that I wasn't sharing in the classroom. And after a few, you know, things that we handed in, she approached me and she kind of, you know, had that personal touch as a teacher. And I think this is why she became my favorite teacher, is because she kind of not took me under her wing, but she made me feel like my voice was important. What I was saying wasn't ridiculous. She gave me that feeling of, you know what, Sarah, share. Don't be like, take the risk. Don't be afraid of being judged. Don't, you know, I would always bring myself down like, oh no, I couldn't say that. That's ridiculous. And she'd be like, no, that's actually a really good idea. And then she would show me why. So she really boosted my confidence in who I was as a student and who I was as a writer. And ever since then, she inspired me to become an English teacher. And here I am.
Very cool. You know, there's a running belief. I haven't actually tracked this in any way, but as a former English teacher, it always makes me happy when my guests say that their English teacher was their favorite. And I believe of all my guests, I'm fairly certain that English is like half the time people say it's their English teacher that was the best teacher they ever had. And that just makes me happy. I love that.
Me too.
So thank you for continuing that trend.
I'll be an English teacher soon too. So hopefully I become students' favorite teachers. Cause, you know, I really want to model that person, like just personable. Be more personable. Does that make sense? With the students? I don't like that I'm the teacher, you're the student, there's a fine line, you know, I don't want to get to know you. Like, I want to get to know my students. That's what I'm most excited about, is creating those relationships with my students, getting to know them, getting to know what they think, and really just working with them and for them to make them better and to help them grow.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I notice throughout a lot of your answers and a lot of the discussions we've had today that so much of what you have become and you have done is about sharing your beliefs and sharing your thoughts and getting involved with other people sharing and getting other people to share.
I guess so.
And that's one of those things that you point to right away with that favorite teacher is that she got you to be sort of who you are today.
That is very true. There's kind of a running line. That's my stream of consciousness. I just love people. I'll talk like Donald Trump. I just love people. I love connecting. Yeah. I really do. And they, like, speaking with you today is just igniting my fire. You know, I'm just going to go home for the rest of the day and just be super chipper because I really love talking to people, connecting with them, getting to know their story, sharing my story. Like, people inspire me.
Well, that's what my show is all about. So I've been glad to have you.
Thank you.
You know, so I just want to kind of, I kind of want to connect this thought here and just, you know, one of the things you said about your favorite teacher is that she encouraged you to take that risk and share. And I think that's a critical point there, because for someone like you and me, at least now for you and me most of my life, this idea of sharing and giving your thoughts and putting your ideas out there is never been abnormal. I mean, I run a podcast, and for anybody that knows anything about podcasting, the stats you get are pretty limited and not always 100% accurate. So a lot of times it just feels like you're talking into a void. Nobody's really listening. I can't even tell you how many podcasters joke about only their mom and dad listening. So totally normal. But that's kind of what we do, right? Like, that's what it is. But what I think the critical point that I feel like needs to be taken away from this is, going forward, that is going to become the single most critical skill we can teach a student, because we are such a consumer society at this point. And so many of the repetitive, non-creative tasks that we can do are going to become automated. And the people that are going to be able to differentiate themselves in the future of work are people who can be creative, share their ideas, and put those out there. And so what I take from pretty much everything you've said today is that you, as an up-and-coming teacher, recognize the value in sharing your own work. And I can only assume that that's going to be something you push into your classroom, getting your students to share the work outside of the walls of your classroom.
Yes. I can't wait.
And so I hope that all of my listeners kind of pick up on that. And I'm wondering, I guess, if you agree with me in the idea of sort of the bigger picture.
Yeah, absolutely. Because especially, well, bringing it back to the student work, when you share it outside of those four walls, doesn't mean that when you just put it on a bulletin board outside of your classroom. No, when you actually take the learning outside of the school, it becomes so much more meaningful. And, you know, we wouldn't be doing this podcast and we wouldn't really care what we were saying if we didn't think that other people are going to listen to it, right? So that's why we're here. That's why we're sharing. That's why you're creating, because what we're doing now, we believe, is valuable and can help other people. And I think that that's what we have to show our students.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Well, Sarah, this has been a ton of fun.
It flew by.
It did. That's crazy. We're like coming up on an hour here. So do me a favor. Tell my audience how they can get a hold of you, how they can connect with you. What's the best ways to reach out to you and all that kind of stuff?
Excellent. So if you haven't guessed it already, I'm on Twitter. You can my Twitter handle is at Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, Lalonde, L-A-L-O-N-D-E-E. Two E's at the end because somebody already stole my actual name. So you can also
Sarah Lalonde.
I know. Oh, I'm sure they're wonderful.
Have you ever looked up to see if they're just like an egg? Because that would annoy me, I feel like.
I don't want to know. I'm not going to do it. But you can also connect with me on the Voice Ed Radio account, and I encourage everyone to go follow Voice Ed Radio. So that would be at Voice Ed, so V-O-I-C-E-D, Canada. So Voice Ed Canada on Twitter.
Yeah, and any of my listeners or anyone connected with me will have definitely seen that Voice Ed account for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely.
As well as Sarah's account, because we chat back and forth.
We do.
A decent amount on there.
I love it.
So, it's great. It's been awesome connecting with you. This recording has been awesome. It's been great. I'm glad I didn't die from Hurricane Irma so that we could have this conversation. So
thanks so much, Brad. It's been a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, and if you ever come down to Disney and want to, you know, step away and get away from Disney for a few minutes, you know, you're welcome to meet up with me. I'd love to have a coffee.
I'll meet you at Disney. Disney or bust.
I don't know about that.
We'll figure it out.
All right. Have a good one, Sarah.
You too.
I can't speak for you guys, but I am ignited and ready to go teach. Thank you, Sarah, for sitting with me. If you'd like to connect with Sarah, find her on Twitter. She's at Sarah Lalonde with an extra E. Also, be sure to check out her podcast, Que Sera Sera. Like me, you might feel real sad when she starts speaking in French on half the episodes and you can't understand. But at the very least, the English episodes are excellent. Especially her back-to-school episode. If you are needing a pick-me-up and reminder of why you do this, I highly recommend it. As always, if you like what you've heard, do me a favor and give me a review on iTunes. It is the best way you can help out the show. Head over to tinyurl.com/planningperiodreview, and you're right where you need to be. You can also connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Shuffler. I always love to hear from you guys. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. I'm scheduling interviews right now, so message me on there and I'll be glad to talk to you about it. Until next week, don't let your title or how others look at you limit what you can accomplish. Music for this podcast is provided by Kevin MacLeod and the song Vicious, licensed under Creative Commons. This show is also a proud member of the Voice Ed Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. Your voice belongs here.